Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
I purposefully sandbagged this specific article because, well, nobody in Ian and I wanted to get your opinions on it and your discussion surrounding it, because I wonder how far-reaching this may become. It is exclusive to Washington State at this time, but according to this article from crosscut.com, the Washington Supreme Court drug possession ruling upends Washington's criminal justice system. In the Blake decision, the Washington Supreme Court voided most drug possession cases in the state.
Wow.
How?
The implications will be huge. Well, that's a good question, and I'm glad you asked. When Kelly Vamaca first read that the Washington Supreme Court had struck down the law criminalizing drug possession in the state, she was in disbelief. The Blake decision, named for the woman as its center, was not at all on Vamaca's radar. While she was peripherally aware of the case, she would not have guessed that this is where it would lead. In this, she was not alone. Attorneys, advocates, lawmakers, even the lawyer who argued before the nine justices on Shannon Blake's behalf were all surprised that the court would take the case of a woman with drugs in her jean pockets. I went to work with this guy who was a former sniper in one of the armed forces. I'm not sure which one. I think he was a Marine.
They're always sniping at people.
And we were at a company function, right? It was like maybe a holiday party for the company that I worked for. And he had a couple of cocktails in him. And I was just sitting there. One of the other guys that we worked with asked this guy, you know, hey, what was it like being a sniper in the military? And this guy already, like, I kind of had a weird vibe about the guy. I felt like he was kind of, you know, teetering on the edge of crazy town. But
well, that kind of life experience doesn't tend to make you saner.
Right. So he goes on to say, he's like, well, it was interesting because I was so far away from the person. I could see them, of course, through the scope. But then I could just pull the trigger and they were dead. And it didn't bother me at all. Mm. And I don't know why. And I was like, I just sat there. I didn't say anything, but I was like stunned in disbelief. I'm like, you know, here's what happens to a man who's taught how to murder for, you know, the military, right?
You might be a monster. That might be why it didn't affect you.
It's self-aware that, yes, I did commit murder and that, yes, I just took out a human being. But for some reason, it didn't bother me.
No, see, it's not murder when they do it, because it's an authorized legal taking of life.
Yeah.
Oopsie, that hard can of Gatorade and that cigarette of crack cocaine, but I'd like to give another hoop.
Is he talking about crack cocaine on every single phone call now?
No. It's a cigarette addiction.
I do not freebase cocaine.
It's a cigarette addiction. It's a gateway drug of nicotine.
So yeah. Cocaine is a gateway drug to nicotine? That seems backwards.
Like the marijuana, they say in the government.
As usual, I have no idea what this gentleman is trying to say. I'm sure he's a very nice man. However, he cannot communicate to save his life.
I usually just let him babble for a while and then go, what?
Yeah.
What are you trying to say?
Huh? Maybe he's been smoking the crack.
I don't know what he's doing, but he ain't making much sense.
No, it's Hoopty DJ Connor talking Tea Party and FOP, that the good, honest, most constitution, conscience institution.
Drug charges, as one attorney put it, are central to the DNA of the country's criminal justice system, adding months to sentences, often leading to downstream consequences. And now that DNA must be extracted in Washington. What's more, even if lawmakers were to pass a new law tomorrow, a pillar of the legal system is that new laws cannot criminalize past behavior, which means there's no going back from the Blake decision. This case was cataclysmic, said Homan. From here onward, we're going to be saying before Blake and after Blake.
Wow.
So at the core of the Blake decision is the question of the state's power to police. When it came to drug possession, Washington was the only state remaining in which prosecutors did not need to prove intent.
Imagine, though, thinking, I mean, cataclysmic, think of that word. Imagine thinking it's a horrible thing if you can't ruin people's lives for nothing.
Yeah, I mean,
I mean, this guy really thinks that in order for it to be a decent world, we have to be able to ruin people's lives for no reason.
Yeah, when there was no victim, no person, and no property was harmed. Yeah. These are victimless crimes.
The only criminals involved were the pigs, the legislators,
the prosecution, the court,
the prosecution,
the police. Right,
they were the criminals.
And we've been talking about what happened in Spokane in 2016. Where
somebody was arrested during a warrant relating to stolen vehicles. They had methamphetamine in the person's lady's back pocket. She claimed they were her friend's jeans. She had no idea there were drugs in there.
Right. And the article continued to say that if the drugs were indeed not hers, it was her job to prove it. And the article gave an example. When Blake's case made...
Well, and that's because in this one state, prosecutors don't have to prove intent.
Correct. They're the only state the last state in the union that still has that. Apparently, other states did. I was unaware of that until I read this article. When Blake's case made its way to the Washington Supreme Court, Lechich's primary argument was that Washington's drug possession law actually did imply that prosecutors must prove intent. By this argument, a new precedent could have been set and Blake cleared of her charges, but the law itself would likely have been left to stand. But as his secondary argument, Lechich argued that if intent was not implied, then the whole law ought to be found unconstitutional as a violation of the tenet that people are innocent until proven guilty. So in a narrow 5-4 decision, the justices agreed with Lechich's second argument, surprising the attorney himself.
It's still a little hard for me to get my head around exactly what they overturned here. My understanding so far is the Supreme Court said that the original intent of the legislation could be implied or could be interpreted that it implied that intent must be proven. But over all this time, they haven't been proving intent, and so therefore, almost all of these cases should be overturned. I understand that correctly?
That's how I understand it.
So basically, this is only going to affect Washington State, and all other state laws are going to remain intact because they have to prove intent? This is not going to affect anyone outside of Washington State?
Washington State would have to rewrite a new law.
Which they could do.
Right, which they could do. But,
and they may do.
But it can't affect anybody prior to the law
being
written.
Ex post facto, I believe, is that terminology there?
The software term is backwards compatible. The law that the new law that they may introduce or
goes from that day forward.
Goes from that day forward and can't be retroactive.
So that's great news for the people who've been convicted of drug possession in Washington State. But I really wish this had a larger implication beyond Washington State. But if all the other states have their laws quote unquote written correctly, which of course we don't think any of this should exist. I mean, the prohibition is a terrible idea. Think about how many people who have taken a guilty plea on drug possession didn't know that intent was going to be required, like in the other 49 states, where apparently intent was a required aspect of getting a guilty conviction. Most people just figure, well, they caught me with the drugs. They were my drugs, so I'll take a guilty plea.
Right.
But they actually had to prove intent. You have to prove that the person knew that there were drugs on them. Well, if you don't say to the cops when they're arresting you, oh yeah, those are my pills or whatever. Well, okay, now they know you've admitted to it.
We don't do that because we don't talk to cops.
Right. Whereas if you don't say anything to the police, they then they supposedly have to prove that you knew you had those drugs on you. And how the hell can they prove that?
Right.
So now you've got Washington State overturning, basically through its Supreme Court, simple drug possession, which is interesting because Oregon, through the through the ballot initiative process, decriminalized simple possession of drugs in the November election. Yep. So now you've got those two next door states where basically possession of drugs is now legal. They're telling the cops to stop investigating and arresting people for in Seattle and other parts of Washington State for simple possession at this point. That's a huge change.
And I just want to make it clear to the listeners that we're not just talking about marijuana. We're talking about
all
possession
drugs.
Of drugs. The bit from Reason says, in an opinion issued on Thursday, the court concluded that the absence of mens rea, a guilty mind, quote
That's
unquote,
what it means in Latin.
Right. Requirement violated the right to due process.
Right.
As a result of the decision. So
it's unconstitutional.
And Washington police have indeed stopped arresting people for simple possession while prosecutors are dropping pending cases and seeking orders vacating past convictions under the law.
Now, I think it's unconstitutional, all drug prohibition in all 50 states, because it violates your right to conscience. It violates your right to possession of the things that make you happy, of the things that if you're in seek of happiness and this is something that brings you happiness, then or whether it brings you happiness or not, just because you're seeking it, you should be able to have these things.
Yeah, I mean, people say, oh, well, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness doesn't have any constitutional bearing because it's in the Declaration of Independence rather than in the Constitution. But they forget about the Ninth Amendment, which says that the enumeration in this Constitution of certain rights shall not be held to deny or disparage others retained by the people.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
U.S. COVID relief, and I'm going to clarify here, this headline is talking about all three of the COVID relief things that have been passed so far combined. U.S. COVID relief was enough to give every taxpayer $41,870, but we got peanuts instead.
And considering that they stole our lives for a year, you know, that would be a far more reasonable compensation rather than, you know, giving us, what, $600 and then handing out trillions to corporations who are not, last I heard, even susceptible to COVID.
Oh, how about sending money overseas to foreign countries for reasons?
Yeah. Well, you know, the foreign aid, the art of redistributing money from poor people in rich countries to rich people in poor countries.
Indeed. So President Biden just signed his sweeping $1.9 trillion spending package into law. Once this bill hits the books, total taxpayer expenditure on COVID relief will hit $6 trillion, again with a trillion, which roughly estimated comes out to $41,870 in spending per federal taxpayer. The sheer immensity of this spending is hard to grasp. For context, $6 trillion is more than one-fourth of what the U.S. economy produces in an entire year, according to Fox Business. The COVID spending blowout is at least 8 times bigger than the inflation-adjusted price tag of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal.
Wow. Then the inflation-adjusted price tag of the New Deal.
8 times bigger.
Oh, man. Now, does this include the $1.9 trillion? It does,
it
right?
Does. Okay. Yes. Okay. So all three of the COVID relief, we'll call them bills.
Yeah. And you know there's going to be another one before the end of the year.
Oh, of course there is. They're having too much fun.
Oh, yeah. They're not slowing this down.
Giving money to all their friends and, you know, in the form of, well, as we said, foreign aid. And then it shuffles, of course, back to them over here by way of doing that.
The payoffs and the ripoffs and the things nobody saw.
Moreover, the COVID spending bills have all lost huge sums of money to unrelated carve-outs, politician pet projects, corporate bailouts, fraud, waste, and worse. In the latest $1.9 trillion package, more than 90% of the spending is not directly related to containing COVID-19. Only 1% of the money, about $15 to $20 billion, is spent on vaccines. So let's compare this to what most Americans actually received. You know, $3,200 would be the stimulus payments if you got all three of them, the 12, the 6, and the 14. You could have gotten a little more than that if you know, to the tune of over $18,000 if you had also received the expanded unemployment benefits.
Which they're bringing back, by the way.
Yeah, of course, and going to continue. And, you know, sort of as a segue, Melanie brought it up last night, not on air, but in between segments, that I've felt this for a while, too. I felt like these stimulus checks and this expanded unemployment stuff was a potential on-ramp to UBI, or universal basic income, right? Mm-hmm. That's to get everybody on the government dole, regardless of whether they're working or not.
Well, there's a lot of people that are collecting unemployment who I'm sure are really liking not having to work and getting hundreds of dollars a week.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty sweet, right?
Yeah, for the moment.
Well, that's just it. They're getting them used to getting those payments. So, yeah, and UBI, they're going to clamor for that. Like, whoa, I can keep the gravy train going?
Right.
Well, that's the least harmful thing they can do with the money, when you think about it. Because anything else they do with the money is going to involve robbing us and giving it to their friends.
Well,
I would rather the gig give it back to us than give it to their friends.
Which they'll never do.
So for almost all Americans, the actual benefits of the multiple pieces of lengthy stimulus legislation come in far, far lower than the figure they would have received if the entire pile of money was just evenly split up and sent out. How can that possibly be considered a success? In fact, it's actually a net negative. The trade-offs are inescapable. Too often, the stimulus conversation is simply framed around whether we should give money to a certain group of people or a program, rather than also including the trade-offs and costs. The question isn't just, should we send people $1,400 stimulus checks? It is instead, should we send people $1,400 stimulus checks at the cost of taking the equivalent amount, or more if you factor in waste, from other people? It's not just whether we should send $350 billion to state and local governments, but should we do so at the cost of taking an average of $2,442 per federal tax victim? I'm sorry, taxpayer.
The government, these are good questions.
The government doesn't have anything. It doesn't provide anything the government has that it gives to you. It first must take.
That's correct.
From somebody else.
And that's what happens when they print the money, too. Even though they're not taking it directly, they're still taking the value of the money that you might have in a savings account.
I talk about this frequently, where when the government wants to cover up something that they're doing, they give it an unusual amount of words or unusual phrases. They make up new stuff. I have a few of my favorites, but this one, unaccompanied migrant children in overflow facilities. What does that mean? What do you suppose that means?
Kids in cages.
Kids in cages! Yeah. Yay! Remember before the election, and it was all the rage to criticize Trump for the kids in cages?
Indeed. Now it's not a thing at all. The news
media. Well, you don't think these hypocrites actually cared about the kids, do you?
No. The kids were a tool.
The kids are still in cages, by the way. They're just renaming the cages now. They're called unaccompanied migrant children in overflow facilities.
Biden-approved facilities.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. What's one of my favorite ones of these?
Great. Now we've got a child molester making these decisions.
That'll come out great.
Well, yeah.
What could possibly go wrong?
My favorite one of these euphemisms government makes up is, one of my favorites anyway, is kinetic military action.
Mm-hmm.
Also known as bombing.
Ah, okay.
Yes. Yes, we have engaged in kinetic military action. No. You've been bombing people again, haven't you? So, yeah, kids in cages again. They're in the news. This from digitaljournal.com. The U.S. orders emergency agency to help with child migrant surge. The Health and Human Services, HHS, is currently holding about 8,800 migrant children.
Wow.
And the U.S. Customs and Border Protection has hundreds more in their charge, with more arriving every day. In February alone, CBP detained 9,457 unaccompanied migrant children at the southern border. Facilities are overcrowded, and authorities are doubly challenged by restrictions related to COVID-19.
Well, it's okay now. The kids are no longer being held by the Customs and Border Patrol. They're in the hands of FEMA. It's okay. Rest easy.
These are the people that Alex Jones warned you about.
The ones with the plastic coffins.
Remember after Hurricane Katrina, where the FEMA agency brought in a bunch of like trailers or something like that, and they had like formaldehyde all throughout them, and they were essentially poisoning the people that were staying in them. Remember that story?
I do. Surprise.
These are the same people now taking care of thousands of children.
And they had huge fields full of trailers that never even got delivered. They're probably still sitting there.
Yep. Two California cops have been charged with extorting cash and marijuana from motorists.
But without police, who would jack your weed?
Now, this happening in California in the last 5 years? This is a recent story?
This article is from 3/15/2021.
I mean, this is something you would expect to see in the news in 1998, maybe, when, you know, weed was still mostly illegal, with the exception of medical that had just started in California. But
well, you
got
to remember that these guys are on a power trip.
They've got enough laws in California that you can't turn around without breaking one. They can always find something to blackmail you for.
I mean, there's no doubt the cops are going to do what cops are going to do, in this case, extort and use violence and threats against people. But, I mean, are the cops that hard up for some weed? They can. I mean, everywhere you turn in California, you can find weed legally.
But
now,
if it's
they
free,
don't pay for anything,
that's true.
They expect everything handed to them for free, from their coffee to their donuts to their weed to, you know, they gotta rape the occasional motorist.
It is really interesting to note that people give cops free stuff, when in fact they're already living off the public's money.
Yeah, well, people love the police. I mean, only in 2020.
Maybe people do, but I'm nobody.
Nobody had said in the last segment that he thought maybe the number of police shootings and abuses had gone down in 2020 due to all the hubbub in the summertime, the protests, for instance, etc.
Since they burned down the police station in Minneapolis.
Suggesting that somehow these
that
things
was
were
such joy to watch.
That somehow these things, I don't disagree, it was fun to watch that, but but unfortunately it hasn't done anything to slow the police violence. According to mappingpoliceviolence.org, police killed 1,127 people in the year 2020, compared to, because you got to compare it, to 2019. According to prisonpolicy.org, the police killed 1,099 people in 2019. And in 2018, I saw that it was just below 1,000. So it's been about 1,000 a year, but it's been rising over the last few years. So actually, the police killings went up in the year 2020 as compared to the previous 2 years.
What was the number in 2020?
2020, according to mappingpoliceviolence.org, it is 1,127 people in the United States. That does not include the rest of the planet.
1,127.
So that is correct. More than in 2019 and 2018.
I'm looking for the date.
You know, there used to be some sites that tracked this sort of thing.
It is. It's mappingpoliceviolence.org.
It's still still there.
There were just other interesting statistics on here from 2020. There were only 18 days in the year where police did not kill someone, according to
Oh, they must have been
numbers.
On vacation. Don't they get like 3 weeks?
Blacks are 3 times more likely to be killed by the police
Surprise!
Than white people, and 1.3 times more likely to be unarmed as compared to white people.
Also surprise.
If you are 5 times...
Maybe there's a relationship there. Maybe they're more likely to be killed because they're less likely to be armed.
You are 5 times more likely to be killed by police in Oklahoma than you are in Georgia, apparently. And there's no accountability. 98.3% of killings by police from 2013 through 2020 have not resulted in officers being charged with a crime. Now, remember, that's only if the officer is charged. There's even fewer cases where the officers are actually convicted of a crime.
The next time you're arguing with a socialist about, no, the current system is socialism. No, the current system is capitalism. No, the current system is socialism, which we frequently, that's what the arguments devolve into.
Indeed.
It gives me hope to reflect that at least both sides of that fight are smart enough to hate the system we have.
That's a good point.
They both want to get rid of it. And the reality is it doesn't really matter that much what the other guys want to do after the boogaloo or what you want to do after the boogaloo, because the reality is the world's going to turn out where the way it turns out. Yeah. And neither you nor I are going to have much impact on what happens to the world. What we're going to have some impact on is what happens in our immediate area.
Mm-hmm.
So if Vermont goes socialist and secedes, and New Hampshire goes capitalist and secedes, I'm all for it. And as a matter of fact, I would probably voluntarily show up and work with their militia if, for example, the feds were trying to take them back and not take us back for some reason. Maybe they're not good. Right. Good riddance to those damn capitalists.
Going back to that conversation you were having before the break about some of the police things, I think an important part of this is that the prosecutors a lot of times charge these police with crimes that they know damn well they're not going to get a conviction on. I mean, you look at what's going on in Minnesota right now. They're not going to get a third-degree murder charge on Chauvin. I mean, the Minnesota law just doesn't add up. It's not going to work. So Chauvin's probably going to walk, and it's not going to matter. Because they over-prosecuted him, and that's why he's going to get off, in all likelihood, he'll get off scot-free.
And that's not an accident. That's not an accident. These prosecutors are professionals.
That's an important part of the conversation,
no? Huh?
It's an important part of the conversation, though.
It is.
It's not necessarily that the cops are always walking scot-free because they've got buddies in high places. Well, yes, that absolutely does happen.
But it was a buddy in a high place who decided to overcharge him, so he got off.
Well, that's
the way of war is deception. You know, when you are large, appear small. When you're small, appear large.
In the case of Minnesota, they're overcharging him to meet popular demand. They think that they can win the masses over by overcharging this guy. And
well,
in all reality, it's probably going to end up in a hung jury or some sort of total acquittal, and it's only going to upset
that's
people
the plan
more. So it's just it's a mess.
Well, what I'd like to know is whether Wisconsin has an open murder statute.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.